you're with us for the morning show as we continue our candidate conversations leading up to Election Day. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Republican Tim Rogers is challenging 8-term U.S. Representative Gwen Moore, a Democrat in the 4th Congressional District. The independent Robert Raymond declined our invitation. We spoke with Tim Rogers last week. Do you live in Milwaukee, Brown Deer, Shorewood, or another community in the 4th District? What issues are driving you to the polls? What do you want to ask Congresswoman Gwen Moore? We're at 800-642-1234. U.S. Representative Gwen Moore of Milwaukee has served in Congress since 2004. She's seeking her 9th term and is a member of the House Ways and Means Committee. Representative Moore, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Good morning, everyone.
So our massive upsurge in cases is among the worst in the nation. Hospitalizations here of COVID have more than doubled in the last month, 86% of ICU beds in use. What are you doing to help Wisconsinites weather this crisis?
Oh, Kate, this is such a nightmare. I have family members who are sick and have underlying conditions, and so I'm very terrified. What we have tried to do as a majority in the House of Representatives is to pass another pandemic package, really to incentivize people to stay at home, to get tested, to be treated, and to reduce some of the insecurity that they're feeling. You know, the census, now retired census, did a weekly survey, and they did one during July and found that like 29 million people were food insecure, that they were depressed, drinking more, having suicidal ideations. So it's not just the pandemic. It's the underlying economic despair and other things that are having a real impact on other folks. We have really, our leader, Nancy Pelosi, has done a phenomenal job trying to negotiate. And one of the things that the Republicans have resisted, and the president has resisted, is to provide aid to state and local governments. And that would include monies for our schools. You know, it's sort of ironic to say that you want people to get back to work, you want kids to get back to school, but you aren't providing one square foot of plexiglass for these classrooms. Not one visit from mechanics to fix the ventilation systems in our older school structures. And so we're working really hard to try to do that.
Well, let me ask you this, because Democrats, Republicans, and the White House have been unable to reach a deal on the second stimulus for months, and talks have been largely put off ahead of Election Day. Senate's adjourned till the 9th. Why can't Democrats strike a deal when Americans and Wisconsinites are in dire straits? Why can't Democrats make some compromise?
Compromise is the name of the game. But what should that compromise look like? What Republicans are putting forward are initiatives to help larger businesses with the PPP. They want liability from the coronavirus a pandemic for these larger companies. They want the benefit to inure to the top corporations, and they're resisting providing funding for state and local governments. You know, every time we talk about enhancing the child tax credit or providing more money for the Women, Infant, and Children's Program, the WIC program, or food stamps, we're accused of trying to pork up the bill for a wish list of Democratic dreams. I don't think food is a wish list when we have, as of in July, and it's worse now, people saying that their food is insecure. Kate, there are people who haven't paid rent since July, and all of the provisions in the first CARES Act to provide people with relief from being evicted evicted have expired.
I literally
have nightmares every night about being evicted.
Well, let me ask you this, because Senate Democrats, they blocked the $500 billion Republican coronavirus relief bill last week. And you mentioned the more money for PPP, a $300 per week supplemental unemployment insurance benefit, liability protections for businesses, as you mentioned. It did not include another round of direct payments to people. Is it the stimulus checks that are the sticking point? What piece of this next stimulus is causing the greatest divide?
Well, listen, let me back up a little bit, Kate. What is really holding it up is, what will Donald Trump sign? Mitch McConnell has taken himself out of the mix because he doesn't want to put himself out there and make a commitment and negotiate in good faith, knowing how mercurial the president is and what will he sign. Also, he's got at least 20 of his senators who don't want to do anything with regard to providing people more stimulus. Now, you look at that $300 unemployment insurance that they want to provide. That really taxes really closely to the minimum wage. And, you know, so one of the sticking points is that we initially gave people $600 a week for unemployment insurance. And, you know, Republicans, in their stinginess, they've decided that they don't want to initiate any moral hazard by spoiling people who might get, you know, a couple of pennies over the minimum wage. And again, it's state and local government. The $500 billion is nowhere close to the $3 trillion bill that was initially put forward by our caucus, really tracking closely with what the needs were, including more PPP and to save jobs. We went down. We cut $1 trillion off of that immediately. $500 billion is nowhere close to meeting the needs. Who do you throw under the bus, Kate? Who goes under the bus when you cut it? When you cut the bone and sinew and muscle out of a bill, and you know, it's like your children. You know, which one are you not going to feed tonight as you're cutting the budget?
Well, let me reintroduce you. Gwen Moore is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District running for re-election. The district includes parts of the Milwaukee metro region, and we're doing candidate conversations leading up to Election Day, taking your questions. If you live in the 4th Congressional District, what do you want to tell Congresswoman Moore? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind?
You're absolutely right. It'll take $3 or $4 trillion to get our economy going, and these people are standing in the way. It's just not right. Anyway, I studied economics at Georgetown. They don't understand that. But anyway, I wanted to ask this question about these figures come out of the administration's unemployment figures, the Commerce Department. They're all bringing out these spectacular figures. And in your experience, have you found that a month or two later that they revise them downward when it comes out that they're really not actual factual figures? And I'd also like to ask, how can you talk to these people who don't want to vote? What do you say to get them excited to get out there and vote? We've made it so complicated here in Burlington. You can't send a letter that it's got to go to Milwaukee and then get postmarked and then come back here to go a block away to the clerk's office.
Okay, Tom, thank you. And two quite different questions there for you. Go ahead.
They're good questions. So, you know, you're really spot on, Tom, with your economic analysis. It drives me nuts to hear the president talk about how we've got the lowest unemployment rate among African Americans and the lowest unemployment rate, you know, among Hispanics. I mean, when you start from zero, when you start from rock bottom, any number is an improvement with the unemployment numbers rising. When you talk about someone having three, I once had a witness, a Hispanic woman. She had two jobs. Her husband had two jobs. You know, they had four jobs trying to support their families. And that's what Donald Trump calls increase in unemployment. It's when people come together, all of these sub-minimum wage, sub-par wages. And the second part of the question is very difficult to convince people who are determined not to vote to vote. I think that the success of the Russian trolling and the interference and the lack of integrity around some social media has really confused people. And I think people are getting double messages. I think we at some point we need to do major campaign reform. Every station is not public radio, Tom, where you hear both sides, where you get just the facts, where there's fact checking, and where people don't have an agenda. It's very, very difficult. What I've said to young people in particular, since that is the cohort in Wisconsin that really is going to tip whether or not whether or not we elect Joe Biden here or not, is that, you know, the person who signed your birth certificate is an elected official, and the person who's going to sign your death certificate is an elected official. And everything that happens between that little dash is a decision that's made by someone who is in public office. So you need to participate. Everything from how much your vehicle registration fee is going to cost, whether or not Foxconn gets funded by your tax dollars, whether or not you'll be able to access birth control, for God's sake, much less an abortion. How about birth control? So I just want people to know that if you want agency over your life, you just really have to vote.
We are in the midst of candidate conversations leading up to Election Day. U.S. Representative Gwen Moore is running for re-election in the 4th Congressional District. We spoke with her Republican challenger, Tim Rogers, last week. The district covers the city of Milwaukee and area suburbs. Are you an undecided voter in the 4th? What do you need to know before casting your ballot? What should Congress be laser focused on amid the pandemic? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Congresswoman Gwen Moore here on the Ideas Network. It's candidate conversations leading up to the November general election on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Democratic incumbent U.S. Representative Gwen Moore as we focus on the 4th congressional district race. And Congresswoman Gwen Moore stays with us for 10 more minutes. You know, I want to zero in on Milwaukee. COVID case numbers in Milwaukee County are close to 41,000. There's a new health order in Milwaukee. Bars and restaurants are on the cusp of closure. What do you think the federal government should be doing to bring the pandemic under control? And specifically, what can you do about what Milwaukee is seeing?
Oh, let me tell you, our governor has been under siege from Republican legislators. You know, I consider them to be mobs of people, not true militias, demanding that they have their quote-unquote freedom to infect everyone by not wearing masks. You know, the science is very clear that wearing masks really reduces infection rates by 50%. I mean, that's a pretty substantial number. I mean, if you they have a 50-50 chance of not catching it by merely wearing a mask. And, you know, it's such a small sacrifice to make.
Should the government be mandating masks in public spaces?
Well, it's a matter of public health. I mean, people have invented these rights, Kate Archer. I mean, I have never interpreted the First Amendment as being able to contravene other people's rights. You know, you have a right, and I have a right, too. I have a right not to be infected because of your inconsideration. Sure. And not only should they mandate it, but I think that we ought to provide masks for people. It's an expense. People shouldn't have to go to Amazon.com to get masks. We ought to be providing them based on the numbers of households. And in countries where people have had a unified activity. They have brought the numbers down. They've been able to keep their businesses open, and they've been able to put children back to school. And to the extent that we have this patchwork quilt effort, you know, where some cities, you know, like Milwaukee, we try to do the right thing, but outlying areas are going to act like they're in the Wild Wild West and have some, you know, some fantasized freedom to infect everyone. It really, really, you know, and of course the virus doesn't have any boundaries. It can cross any kind of border boundary, and that's what happens. I just really, really want people to take this seriously. We don't want to cut shut the economy down. We want to get it back on track. But Kate, you know, if we had more time, I could walk you through January 28th when the president first learned about the virus.
I want to switch gears here and ask you about lead poisoning, big problem in your district. And we learned this month that the rates of lead testing for children have dropped during the pandemic. What is going on there?
25,000 children a year are poisoned by lead. You know, it's a low priority. Not locally, not statewide, but nationally. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm not off mark when I say that we only put about $1 for every $10 that's really needed to do a national strategy around replacing lead laterals, lead piping. We can't put all the burden on landlords because that would inflate rents beyond what people could afford. This has got to be a national priority. And in fact, in this last appropriations bill, I did put money in specifically to deal with replacing lead laterals. I think that the replacing lead laterals along with some sort of work program would really, really enable people to, number one, have training, have jobs. It would reduce the cost in addition to solving a really, really dangerous health hazard.
I mean, we talked with Public Works not long ago saying it's going to take more than two generations to change out those lead service lines. You know, what can we do to make sure that that stays on track or that could be expedited?
Well, again, two generations, and that's what I said, that if you had, that's on a quote-unquote normal trajectory. You have to prioritize this. You have to put some sort of training program in so that you can contain the costs and use local talent, something like the WPA, quite frankly, and make it an emergency work project. And put the federal resources in. I see a lot of people on the local level complaining about what the governor has or has not done, what the mayor has or has not done, but we need money. And even before I put this last initiative into the appropriations bill, I'd worked with the late, great Louise Slaughter to reinforce and shore up our two sources of water bills, but again, it's only a drop in the bucket, pun intended, I guess, in terms of what we really, really need to deal with this. And this is not just, you know, it drives me nuts to hear people talk about Flint, Michigan, because our numbers are right on track with the numbers of children who are poisoned from lead, as is the case in Flint. Flint had an entirely different situation with regard to what I regard is irresponsible and even criminal behavior on a part of elected officials. But when you look at the numbers of children who are impacted, it's similar. And of course, this causes permanent brain damage. There's some research that says it causes violence. When you look at our prison population, you will see an eerie connection between lead poisoning and people who have become violent. And so this is a public health problem, and it needs to be treated like an emergency so that you can provide the funding that you need so that you can speed up the response. and not have it be two generations away. We can't afford that.
Talking with Gwen Moore, Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District running for re-election. We're having our candidate conversations leading up to Election Day. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. I want to land on racial injustice and what we saw over the summer in the protests and the ways to address racial injustice and the Black Lives Matter movement. What must happen in this discussion to make sure that this doesn't get swept under and just, you know, go away? What do you need to do at the federal level and the state level?
Kate, thanks for asking that question. You know, I think the most important thing that we need to do has already been done, and that is to raise people's consciousness about it. You know, unfortunately, the entire world saw the George Floyd death. And so you just couldn't deny what happened, because all of us, you know, all of us want to see our police officers be safe. All of us realize they have a really hard job. But when you look at that, you have to ask your question. You have to ask questions, you know, about being responsible. I mean, the man was already George Floyd was already under control and just didn't need him to that excessive force is something that we need to deal with. We have a Justice in Policing Act that the Black Caucus put together, and it wasn't something thrown together overnight. It's the experience of generations of Black people. You know, number one, holding police accountable with making sure that they don't just have qualified immunity, that just because they're police officers, you automatically don't look at their behavior, that you change police misconduct statutes so that that they're held accountable. I'm looking at, I'm thinking of Breonna Taylor. No-knock warrants. I mean, they just aren't necessary. They weren't necessary to burst into this young. And maybe the police officers who did that, they say they were doing their job. But my God, why were they there? What had she done that caused them to burst into her home in the middle of the night? So I think that on the federal level, we need to pass the Justice in Policing Act. I think we can get police to come to the table and help us hammer out the best provisions to protect them. And I think we need to do stuff on the state level as well.
Congresswoman Moore, thank you for joining us.
And thank you, and have a good morning. Everybody stay safe, sanitized, sane, and be sure to go and vote.
And that is Gwen Moore on the Ideas Network.